Up, Up, and Away, Episode 34, Mirror Cracked. Hello and welcome to Up, Up, and Away, the podcast dedicated to anything and everything Superman. I am your host, Mari Benessi. You know, I get a lot out of Superman comics. I get a lot of science fiction adventure stories, I get lessons of morality, I get, well, now I get lessons on how to raise a son and how to start a family and be a family man. I can also add how to be a journalist to my list of things that I have learned from Superman comics, because I am killing it in my journalism class. I'm just going to chalk my success in that class up to reading Superman comics. I know what I'm talking about. My professor is always impressed that I know what I'm doing and that my work is as high quality as it is. I've received nothing but A's on all of my assignments in there, and he's a relatively tough grader. But I've received A's in the class for all the assignments, and I'm just going to go ahead and chalk it up to years of reading Superman comics. So thanks, Superman comics. You know, it's paying off. It's, you know, outside of the entertainment value, it's actually good for something else. You know, you learn a thing or two from comic books. So again, encourage your kids to read comic books. Now, as I mentioned, Bizarro would be coming back for this episode, and well, here he is. How you doing, Bizarro? How's your week been?
Bizarro's week was good.
That's good. That's good. So you said last week, you gave me a call before I started recording, and you said that you were going to be working with Red Hood and the Outlaws. How did that go?
Bizarro, I'm enjoying himself on this.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to have a good time having adventures with Red Hood and other members of team.
Now, in the last issue of Red Hood and the Outlaws, it's the second issue of the series, you're on the last page.
Uh-huh.
So, and the teaser for next issue says that you're going to be appearing in the third issue.
Yeah.
And being a regular character from that point on.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you can really give us any kind of hints on?
Bizarro would not really want to give anything away. We don't want to spoil a surprise for readers.
Wait.
What?
Sorry, I'm just realizing this now. You're talking relatively normal. It's not backwards speak.
Oh.
Bizarro, could you do this the whole time?
No, but may have been practicing learning to speak normal like humans.
Oh, well, I appreciate the effort, buddy. It means a lot to me and the listeners. And sometimes I can get a little bit confused whenever I read your stories and you got the whole backwards speak going on. It takes a while to decipher and translate exactly what you're saying. And sometimes they don't do the greatest job at translating what you're saying. It'll come out with a completely different meaning.
Yeah, it'd be annoying to Bizarro too. But next issue of Red Hood am coming out soon, me think.
It comes out October then?
Yeah, October 12th.
Okay, October 12th. All right.
Yeah.
All right, so be sure to pick that one up, guys. October 12th. You know, despite turning 22, I don't really feel that much older. I don't know if that's just a sign of me getting older, where I don't feel any different or what, but birthday just came and passed. It was a thing, I guess. Like, my birthday didn't feel very special, and I mean, a lot of people wished me happy birthday. I guess it was because I was too busy. I had a lot of work to do. I had to edit this podcast, and then I had to record my other podcast, Collectors Coalition, with my buddy. And I had a news article that I had to write that was due. Well, my professor extended the deadline to Saturday at 5 p.m., but I needed to get that done because my mom was coming to visit me on Saturday, and I knew I was going to be out pretty much the entire day, and I wouldn't have time to write it on Saturday and then submit it in time. So I stayed up till like 4 in the morning writing it, but I was going nonstop, because I wake up on Wednesdays and Fridays. My class is at 9:30, but what I like to do is I wake up, I set my alarm for, I have three alarms. I set one for 8:25, 8:30 and 8:35. Now, it doesn't take me very long to get ready, but I make sure that I have three alarms just in case I sleep through one of them, or in case I want to have 5 extra minutes or 10 extra minutes of sleep. So what I do is I get ready, and I head out of my room. I leave about 8:40, 8:45-ish, and I take my longboard over to the library. And in the library, we have a Dunkin' Donuts. And I know that sometimes the line gets really backed up. And so I give myself that 40, 50 minutes extra time to get in line to wait and get coffee and a donut. I do that every Wednesday and Friday. Now, on the Friday that my birthday happened to have fallen on, this past Friday, they must have put a new guy on there. Like, he was obviously new. And this was the most packed I have ever seen this Dunkin' Donuts in the entirety of the 4 years that I have been going to this school. I've never seen it more packed than it was on this day. And it wasn't the part of the line where you get your coffee and you go. It wasn't that. That wasn't the holdup. The holdup was at the very beginning where you place your order. And I'm not trying to slam on the guy. He was trying his best. He really was. And I gotta give him props for that, because, you know, I've been a new employee several times myself, and I know what it's like to be hit with a rush. But he should have been put on a shift that was later in the day, where it was going to be less busy, because the line stretched. It's a very small room, and so there's just like a snake kind of thing going on, where we just kind of... You ever play the game Snake, where you gotta try and not hit yourself by doing zigzags? It was kind of like that. It was a shape like that. But he was new, obviously. And fortunately, I got out of there in time to get to my class. But it was a thing and a half. But I had a really great birthday weekend. My mom came and visited me on Saturday, and I spent the rest of the night because she went to go back to her sister's place. She lives in the next town over. But I spent the rest of the night just watching Netflix and relaxing. I hadn't had a chance to really breathe or have a lot of time for myself outside of just, you know, doing podcasts. It's fun, but it's not just, oh, sit down and relax, Mario. Kick your feet up and read a comic or something. Take a nap if you want. I didn't have a lot of that time last week. And it's just been one assignment after the other, and it's just been hitting hard and heavy. But you know what? I think I'm doing all right. I think I'll be all right. I kind of signed up for this, and I should have expected it. It's my senior year of college. It's getting towards crunch time. I mean, I had a pretty good birthday, like I said. I got some pretty cool stuff. I managed to hit a couple stores. I got a new Superman mug, and it's awesome. I very rarely use my Superman mugs. I have at least 3 or 4 of them, and this is the first time that I've ever used one of them. And it's because I just love it so much. It cost me like $4.99 at, I think I got it at TJ Maxx. So that was a pretty good bargain. I got a couple of small little items. I managed to find the collector's keepsake ornaments that they do every year for Hallmark, but the little $7.99 ones, the ones that you can find in any Christmas aisle. I found that because for some strange reason, I don't know why, apparently it's acceptable to put Christmas stuff out during the middle of September. So I went to Kmart that night, and I went on that Sunday, but they had 3 or 4 aisles of Halloween, right? Awesome. Great. I love Halloween. There's a aisle that separates the two of them. Just nothing there. Just stuff that might be like little summer stuff that's put on clearance. You know, some fake potted plants and all that jazz. And then the next two aisles, Christmas stuff. Just straight up Christmas stuff. But they had the Batman v Superman ornament. And I saw him and I'm just like, I have to pick this up. This is too cool not to have. I'm kind of frustrated because they, you know how they do the prepackaged boxes where they have a set number of items in it? So, like, if it's ornaments, they'll have a complete box of, like, maybe, like, 4 rows with 3 ornaments on each row. Well, 2 of the rows were dedicated to Marvel. one of the rows was dedicated to like a cartoon Spider-Man series, and then the other one was dedicated to Civil War. I don't know why Civil War didn't have its own box thing, but that's fine. But the other two rows that were in that box were Batman v Superman. And the first row was all Batman. All right. That's to be expected. Right? That's three ornaments right there. The row right next to it, it starts out with Superman. So I think to myself, all right, well, if this row is Batman, then this one should be entirely Superman. Nope. Two Supermen. There's four Batman in the box. This whole series box set thing. Four Batman, two Supermen. So that kind of bothered me because it's like, come on, guys. Do we really need this many Batman? Like, it's both of their names are in the movie title, right? Logic would dictate that you would have equal number of items for both characters that are in the title's name, Batman and Superman. Ugh, I hate when they do this. And they do this with the action figures all the time. Every time they have a wave of action figures that comes out and there's a couple Batman figures in there, majority Batman. For the Batman v Superman multiverse line, majority Batman in the box, maybe two or three Superman and like maybe one Wonder Woman figure. Yeah, where's the justice in that? Dawn of Justice? I'm not saying no justice. Speaking of items and limited availability, I finally managed to get my mitts on the Man of Steel Superman pop from 2013. Now, I don't know why, and I couldn't tell you why, but back in 2013, I saw these guys, and I'm like, I'm not really into them. I don't care that much about them. The wave only had two figures in it. It was Superman and General Zod. And I passed both of them up. That was a stupid decision on my part. Because I could have gotten them for the maximum $12.50 asking price for retailers. That's about how expensive they can get. About $12.50. Right? Lowest price, maybe like $8. Let's skip down the timeline a little bit. The movies come out, and they wait a little bit, and they pull the figures from the shelves because the figure's been retired. They can't keep putting the figure out because the movie's been out of theaters for a while, and it's been on DVD and Blu-ray for a certain amount of time. So they pull the figures back in, and they vault them. Kind of like how Disney does their movies. They vault them after a certain period of time. But the thing with Funko is they don't re-release them. They don't take them out of the vault for a limited time only. No, once they're in the vault, they're gone. You can't get them. You have to get them on the aftermarket. So I try to find this figure on eBay. And I've been looking and looking for years. I really want this guy. I'm kicking myself that I didn't buy him when I saw him on the shelves. $60 or so at the very least, right? It's like a $60 to $100-something price range on this one little figure, new in box with the packaging. In mint condition. And that's ridiculous. But I'm like, well, one day I'm going to end up just saving up the money and buying him. I don't know how I managed to have this stroke of luck. But I found him for $30 and like $4 or $5 shipping and handling. Brand new, new in package. I don't think... Yeah, he was opened once, but the previous owner took good care of the figure and the box. I bought it. So I finally have that. I just need to get the General Zod from that wave, and then there are a bunch of other variant Superman figures that are going to cost an arm and a leg. I need to get the Bizarro Pop. I need to get White Lantern Superman, Black and White Superman, Red Sun, Kingdom Come. There's a Man of Steel San Diego Comic-Con black suit exclusive figure. I think that's it. There might be another one that's floating around somewhere, but those are the main ones that are going to be a little bit pricier. I think the next one that I'm going to try to get is Bizarro. He's the least expensive. That or the black and white Superman, which kind of reminds me of the old George Reeves TV show, which is pretty neat. Now, I had visited with a buddy of mine today, and we had stopped into a GameStop, and I've been looking for an Alex DeLarge pop figure from A Clockwork Orange. They have finally got the rights back to putting out Clockwork Orange figures. When Funko first started doing the the pop figures. They had the rights initially for the Clockwork Orange film, but I don't know what happened somewhere down the line. I guess they lost the rights and they only put out a certain number. I think it was like maybe 300 to 500 pieces that were actually distributed. And it's an incredibly expensive figure. It's very hard to find, and it's going to cost them, it's going to cost four arms and five legs to get. But somehow they managed to get the licensing back for it, and they started putting out a Clockwork Orange Pops, or at least just Alex, which is fine because he's the only one. He's the main character. Like you know, everybody wants Alex. But I had stopped into a GameStop over by this big comic book retail chain called Tate's, and I was hoping to find this Alex Pop because the two GameStops in the Boca Raton area did not have him, and he went quick over there. So I pop in there, an unintentional pun, and while I was looking for him, I found something that I didn't even know existed. See, Funko also puts out this these figures called Dorbs, and they're also stylized little figures, but they're more round in shape. Now, I have the regular Batman v Superman Superman Dorb, and then I have the one that came with the Batman v Superman Legion of Collectors box, where he's Kryptonite Green. I didn't know that they had a GameStop exclusive one where he's silver and has the words False God spray-painted on his chest like the statue. Well, that came home with me. And then I managed to find the Alex Pop, so that also came home with me. Just little stories about me collecting. I don't know if it's of any interest to anyone, but I like sharing little stories of my adventures and hunting for things that somebody's going to eventually inherit one day. Hopefully they'll make some money off of it. If not, you know, just have them keep it for their collection or pass it on down as a family heirloom or something of the sort. I don't know. So when we come back, we'll talk about Action Comics Volume 2, number 40, and then hit the Adventures of Superman episode. Don't go away.
Up, up, and away!
After the theatrical cartoons, after the movie serials, a new medium helped define an icon for generations to come.
The Adventures of Superman.
Join Mike Zumo as the Man of Screen podcast enters the next phase with a year-long look at the 1950s television series The Adventures of Superman, starring George Reeves as Clark Kent and Superman.
No comment until the time limit is up.
Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane during season one.
What are you afraid of? What are you hiding?
And Noel Neal as Lois Lane starting in season two.
Superman. What? Why did you wait?
Jack Larson as Jimmy Olsen.
Mr. Kent is Superman.
John Hamilton as Perry White.
Don't call me Chief!
And Robert Shane as Inspector Henderson.
I don't want excuses, I want action.
So, follow along Mike and some possible guest hosts for an in-depth analysis of The Adventures of Superman, starting in June at supermanpodcastnetwork.com and manofscreen.podomatic.com.
This is a job for Superman. I mean, I've got to find it.
Okay, welcome back, folks. So this episode, we're going to be looking at Action Comics Volume 2, Number 40, and the story is entitled Mirror Cracked. It also happens to be the same title as Man of Steel number 4 from the John Byrne miniseries, which is pretty interesting. Before I chose doing this issue for this episode, I was considering doing Superboy number 68, which is the very first appearance of Bizarro. But I thought against it, so I chose to do this one. But yeah, so let's jump into Action Comics number 40. This is cover dated May 2015, and it's written by Greg Pak, art by Aaron Cooter, colors by Will Quintana, letters by Steve Wands, cover art by Aaron Cooter and Will Quintana. Assistant editor is Jeremy Bent, and group editor is Eddie Braganza. Now, this takes place after the events of Superman Doomed. And just a little bit of background, Superman has been kind of trapped in this wormhole or black hole or something for at least 60 days, right? He takes Brainiac, and he shoves him into this black hole, and Brainiac starts seeing bits and pieces of other parts in DC Universe history, so stuff with like the 80s Teen Titans and stuff with like the JSA, and you know, this is all stuff that leads up to Convergence. So there's this issue, which is Action Comics number 40, and then there was like a month or 2 month period during that summer where they took a break. They did Convergence, god-awful story, terribly confusing. The only good thing that came out of it is that we got post-crisis Superman back on New 52 Earth. And then after that, they started the whole Truth thing. So this is kind of like a little filler issue. So let's begin. Superman has fallen through continuity to another world entirely, a cubic planet with a moon made out of cheese. As he speeds through the planet's atmosphere, he begins to recognize the general layout of the land, realizing that he is in a kind of metropolis, but certainly not his. From the roof of this planet's Daily Planet analog, he spots Lois Lane, who recognizes him as her husband, until she sees him more closely and is repulsed by his human features. He is then suddenly attacked by this world's Superman, who is defending his Lois. Superman tries to convince him of his good intentions, but that only seems to goad his attacker, prompting him to realize that this is a world of opposites, and he will have to change his tack. The backward Superman explains, in his backward way, that he can't trust Superman because he speaks in the same manner as his enemy Metallo, who soon appears, revealing that he has kidnapped this Bizarro's friends and intends to crush his enemy in order to ensure a reign of order and reason on their world. Superman tries to ally himself with Bizarro against Metallo until he realizes that it is the intention of Bizarro and his allies to destroy Bizopolis, in the real sense of the word. Doing so pleases them greatly. Metallo explains that ever since a computer took over his brain and helped him think properly, he has been trying to rebuild the city, but they always tear it down again. Superman admits that while his first impulse would be to stop them, now that he sees how happy they are to be destroying their home, and how little damage they appear to be doing to each other, he doesn't feel it's his or Metallo's place to correct their behavior. Superman spots the portal through which he came glimmering and investigates, only to be attacked by Doomsday. Worriedly, Superman refuses to let a killing machine devastate even a planet like this, and shoves Doomsday to the Cheese Moon to fight safely out of the way. He is joined by Bizarro, who demands to know who Superman is fighting. Awkwardly trying to use Bizarro speak, Superman explains that Doomsday is a danger to everyone and, convinced, Bizarro allies with him against the monster. Unfortunately, he is soon infected with the Doomsday virus. Superman worries that Bizarro will destroy the planet and all of its people, but instead, he wreaks cuteness upon them, the opposite of the Doomsday virus's typical behavior. Superman warns Bizarro to fight the infection or he'll destroy all the things he cares about. And after some internal deliberation, Bizarro shoots out into space and causes the infection to dissipate. Unfortunately, he is gone too. Superman spots Bizarro Lois mourning her husband, and Superman attempts to comfort her by insulting him, which she appreciates. Fortunately, though, Bizarro returns from space unscathed and free of infection. Grinning, he condones Superman as his friend by claiming that he isn't. I do like this issue. It does have some problems. I think a lot of it is just Greg Pak trying to cram two stories into the same issue at once. If we had just focused with the whole Metallo thing where he's trying to create order on the Bizarro world, that would have been fine. But the whole Doomsday thing also kind of works because Superman had just got finished getting over the Doomsday virus. He had become Doomsday or Super Doom for at least 3 months of comic book, like, real-world time, and so it kind of makes sense to have that happen to Bizarro, but I'm also kind of wondering where Doomsday came from, because this takes place outside of continuity. Like, it's still in the New 52 continuity. This happens to the New 52 Superman, but it's outside of that continuity. Like, there's Bizarro, there's Bizopolis, which is Metropolis, there's the Unjustice League of Un-America, there's Hitray, you know, all these things exist, these classic tropes of Bizarro. But where did this Doomsday come from? Now, as much as I like Aaron Cooter's art, I think he draws a pretty awesome Superman, and he drew a really great Superman with that rad beard that he had after he came out of that black hole. I don't like the way that he does lips. It's weird. It bothers me. There's a panel right after Bizarro Lois encounters Superman and she's terrified of Superman. I hate that image. It's ugly. I don't know if that was his intent, but he takes the lips and he separates them so much from the teeth. It's jarring to look at. I don't like it. He even does that to regular human characters. I don't know if it's just a thing that's his style, or if it's something that he never learned how to fix, or he's... I don't know. It's just a thing that's bothered me, and it still bothers me about this issue. This is also the issue where Superman loses that really rad beard. Just like when Bizarro is infecting the world with cuteness, like a magic elf or something comes and rips that beard off of Superman's face. Kind of funny. There's some pretty funny moments in here. But yeah, it's a good story. It was a nice change of pace after, you know, the whole Superman doomed thing, and then right before Convergence, and certainly before the god-awful Superman Truth storyline. The cover is okay, and I like Aaron Cooter's art. He was awesome in that period between Action Comics number 25 and I think Action Comics number 50 is where he jumped off, or at least cover art-wise, but I don't know. I don't feel like they needed to flip the image upside down, and they kind of have an error on there. Bizarro's eyes, and this, I don't know if this is DC pushing something like, oh, we need to have the heat vision eyes on everybody that's even remotely Superman-esque. But on the cover, Bizarro has heat vision eyes. But in this actual issue, Bizarro uses flame breath, meaning that he would have ice vision. So, a little bit of a disconnect there. Not a bad story, certainly worth a read. And like I said before I did the synopsis for this one, there was a little bit of deliberation with myself whether I wanted to do Superboy number 68 or a Tales from the Bizarro World story. And I'm probably going to put that off until next month just because it deals with Halloween, and I figured that'd be a great time to put it in there, or at least cover it for the show. Just do it during October as a lead-up to Halloween. So expect that one. That one has no Superman in it at all, and it's just straight up on the Bizarro World. So look forward to that one. Okay, this episode's Adventures of Superman episode is entitled The Runaway Robot. Reviews written by James Lance over at the Superman homepage, so go check it out. A lot of cool information in his analysis of the episode, and some really cool facts that not even I knew. The original broadcast date is January 9th, 1953. It's written by Dick Hamilton, directed by Tommy Carr, stars George Reeves as Superman / Clark Kent, Phyllis Coates as Lois Lane, Jack Larson as Jimmy Olsen, John Hamilton as Perry White, Robert Shane as Inspector Henderson, Lucien Littlefield as Horatio Hinkle, Dan Seymour as Rocco, John Harmon as Mousy, Russell Johnson as Chopper, Robert Easton as Marvin, and Herman Kanter as the police officer. A jewelry store in Metropolis is being robbed. The owner has been bound and gagged by the culprits Rocco and Mousy. The pair of thieves is not stopped by Superman, but a large robot called Hero, created by Horatio Hinkle, eccentric inventor, detective, and Daily Planet correspondent for the rural town of Screen Run, Ohio. The bandits run away without their pilfered items when they see that the machine is bulletproof. Hinkle is trying to deactivate the automaton before it can step on the shopkeeper's head. Horatio is then relieved by the arrival of the police until he is arrested for committing the robbery. In spite of Hero's prevention of the jewel theft, $60,000 worth of diamonds are still missing, and Horatio is being blamed for the crime. Reporters Clark Kent, Lois Lane, and Jimmy Olsen have bailed the bumbling inventor out of prison. However, Hinkle must be released into Clark's custody. To make matters worse for Horatio, Hero was stolen from the police garage. Now, as Jimmy goes with Horatio to Clark's apartment, Lois and Clark search for the robot before it can cause more trouble in the city. Chopper, the gangster who sent Rocco and Mousy to rob the jewelry store, is angry with the two men. They have given him Hero instead of gold and diamonds. Rocco and Mousy thought the robot could commit their crimes for them, but only Horatio knows how to operate it. Chopper then learns from an informant that Hinkle was bailed out of jail by Clark and the others. His man continues to tell Chopper that Hinkle is in Clark's apartment. The telephone rings there as Horatio explains how Hero works to Jimmy. Chopper wants the eccentric reporter to meet him on the corner of 8th and Main Streets to make a deal. Knowing he cannot trick Jimmy into leaving him alone, Hinkle uses a special knockout gas pill that blocks the cub reporter's memory. It looks like Screen Run Ohio's favorite detective is going to get in over his head this time. The staff of the Daily Planet is in a frenzy looking for Horatio and his robot, and Metropolis Police Inspector Bill Henderson thinks that the absent-minded Hinkle stole the missing diamonds. As Clark accompanies Henderson to police headquarters to speak to the jeweler, Lois waits for news from Horatio in Clark's apartment. Meanwhile, Chopper wants Horatio to operate Heroes Controls in order for the machine to steal money from the Metropolis Trust Company by turning Heroes' Acetylene Flame into an oxyacetylene torch to cut through the vault door. Horatio refuses. As a result, he is Chopper's prisoner while the gangsters look for some oxygen. Hinkle is really in a fine mess now. With a radio that was hidden inside Hero, Horatio has contacted his assistant Marvin in Screen Run. Marvin is to contact Clark Kent to tell him where the plucky inventor is, but Rocco has come into the room before the message can be finished. Rocco is now taking Hero away. However, Marvin is still able to make the telephone call. Lois answers and goes to find Hinkle, not realizing that she is about to walk into the jaws of danger. To ensure Horatio's cooperation, Chopper's gang has captured Lois. As Superman searches Metropolis for Hinkle and Lois, the Screen Run correspondent is making Hero steal money from the Metropolis Trust Company. Chopper, Mousy, and Rocco leave the room for a drink. This is the perfect moment for Hinkle to have Hero pull the fire alarms in the neighborhood. Word of Hero's act reaches Clark Kent and Jimmy Olsen. Jimmy leaves to check things out, giving Kent time to become Superman. The Man of Steel will soon find himself face-to-face with adventure. Mousy has learned how to work Hero's controls. Now the robot is attacking Lois and Horatio. Suddenly, Superman bursts into the scene. He dismantles the attacking Hero and deals with Chopper's gang. Hinkle, who is knocked out by Hero, awakens in Clark Kent's apartment with Lois Lane and Jimmy Olsen watching over him. Clark Kent is about to tell Lois that she shouldn't have put herself in danger when Inspector Henderson enters. He wants to know where the stolen diamonds are. Clark finds them in the wreckage of Hero that Superman had left behind when he brought Lois and Horatio to Kent's home. Henderson looks for more precious stones in the metal debris only to receive a shot of flame from Hero's nose and his business end. And it's left out of the review, but this probably has one of the greatest endings to any Adventures of Superman episode ever. See, right after Hero's nose shoots out flame and kind of burns Inspector Henderson's backside, the three reporters start to chuckle a little bit, and he says, all right, the next person who laughs is going to be taken down to the station. And they're all trying to suppress their laughter, and it's just hilarious. I even tried not to laugh, but I couldn't. I snickered a little bit. It's so funny. I really like this episode. I like robots. I like Superman with robots. There's a great moment where Hero attacks Superman. And yeah, Hero wasn't a bad guy. He was, you know, he's a robot. He's being controlled. He was created to do good. But he was used for evil purposes by the villains of the episode. And there's a great moment where, and it got quite a bit of a chuckle out of me, where they send the robot to attack Superman, and the robot kind of goes to do like a slap, trying to slap Superman in the face. It doesn't bother Superman, he just looks at the hand, and then the next thing you know, we get a shot from Hero's feet, and just pieces of the robot just falling down, the head, the arms, the torso, then the legs just fall over. I'm like, okay. Superman's just having none of it, Hero. Phyllis Coates does a lot of screaming in this episode. Still very chilling. She's very good at screaming. I like her Lois a lot. Not as much as Noelle Neal, but yeah. I do like the gangsters in this one. I'm a sucker for good gangsters, and these are the kind of gangsters that I like. They're this, you know, the smooth-talking, wise guy, eh? That's Quaitens for you. It's a fighting woids. You know, that kind of stuff. I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. The actor who plays Hinkle, he's kind of got a Jimmy Stewart accent thing going on. It's kind of funny. Now, I didn't know this before I read the review on the Superman homepage, but Professor Hinkle is actually based off of a character that was in both the Superman comic strip, the newspaper strip, and the radio show. And in the newspaper strip, his name was Horatio Hook. I forgot what his name was for the radio show, but I also learned that the original draft for this episode, the character's name was Horatio Hook, and it was for Hook or Crook or something like that. And so that was pretty neat to learn. I didn't know that. So, you know, it just goes to show you, you could be hosting a podcast and still learn new things about the character and the mythology every day, every time you go and turn the mic on. So let's jump into the Essential Superman Encyclopedia. Anomaly. Floyd Bullets Barstow is just number 4, another one of the many resident clones working at Project Cadmus, when the teleporting Harry Misa was more of a mischief maker at this point than an actual criminal, invaded the lab seemingly on a whim, since Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen number 148, April 1972. Barstow was the first staffer to encounter her, and she scratched him when he tried to restrain her as she escaped in the blink of an eye. The scratch became inflamed, and in some way this seemed to trigger the emergence of Barstow's power to reform his body out of any material he touched. For example, his first encounter with Superman was at a construction site where he became, in rapid succession, a creature of marble, steel, and wet cement. Evidently, the tissue from which Barstow was cloned may have contained a metagene, the genetic anomaly that defines metahumans and whose activation manifests the metahuman's latent abilities, though there is no documentation of this in the specific case of Barstow. If this theory is correct, however, perhaps the scratch was the trigger of that gene in this case. What was known about the donor of the genetic material, who is also the source of his clone's name, was that he was a convicted killer called Bullets Barstow. The heavily redacted documents obtainable from Cadmus under the Freedom of Information Act seem to suggest that in this instance the goal of the cloning was to test whether an inclination towards criminal behavior could be a genetic predisposition. Indeed, this was the question that weighed heavily on Barstow's mind. A kind, responsible, and generous man prior to his transformation and adoption of the criminal alias Anomaly, Barstow was a kind of Jekyll Hyde by way of the mother of the Bad Seed, always acting out the internal struggle of a divided nature, while wondering all the while if evil was in his DNA and impossible to resist. That's in The Adventures of Superman, number 539, October 1996. Together with Misa, Riot, Barrage, and Maxima, Barstow made up one of the two post-crisis incarnations of the Superman Revenge Squad, this one formed by Intergang operative Morgan Edge, who turned out to be engaging in a vendetta against Lex Luthor. It was Edge's intention that squad members fail in their assignment and be apprehended so that Luthor would be framed for their crime. That's in The Adventures of Superman number 543, Action Comics number 730, Superman the Man of Steel number 65, and all of those are from February 1997. As a result of Barstow's recruitment by Edge, it was Intergang that broke him out of prison after Superman defeated the squad, and it was Intergang that ordered Anomaly to murder Cadmus's guardian. But at the 11th hour, Barstow's inner conflict asserted itself, and it seemed he couldn't bring himself to fight his old friend to the death. The Guardian bested him handily, resolving to take him back to Project Cadmus to see what could be done to restore him to normal. That's in The Adventures of Superman, number 550, September 1997. The Guardian's hopes that Floyd might be rehabilitated were quashed when Anomaly took part in a Stryker's Island jailbreak, stopped by the Justice League of America. That's in Superman, volume 2, number 147, August 1999, and subsequently joined a band of other Superman foes. That time, he was laid low by a telepathic bolt from Supergirl. That's in Batman and Superman World's Finest number 10, January 2000. The Antihero. The Antihero was, in essence, the supervillainous equivalent of the Wizard of Oz. He was an all-powerful and mysterious force, the mere mention of whose name supposedly left an entire cosmos of metahumans quaking in their boots. But he turned out to be little more than that man behind the curtain. He was, as one reporter put it, an urban legend on a cosmic scale. His reputation, entirely of his own making, was that he was the universe's first and most fearsome supercriminal, alongside whom the worst mass murderers on Earth paled. He was supposed to have the horrifying ability to absorb and deploy the superpowers of every metahuman he killed. Thus, he was said to have thousands of discrete powers, the number climbing with every atrocity he committed. Allegedly, he traveled between star systems in a city-sized death ship, yet no sighting of the Antihero had ever been recorded. As it turned out, he was indeed an interstellar traveler, but the size of his vessel was somewhat exaggerated, as the Kal-El Superboy, Supergirl, and Steel discovered. The Antihero's arrival in Earth orbit was the first occasion on which these three worked together formally as Team Superman. When the Man of Steel ostensibly blundered badly in handling a terrorist hostage-taking crisis, dozens of innocent people died. Taking full responsibility, Superman formally resigned his position as Earth's protector and left the planet. But Lois Lane, who was by then secretly Superman's wife, suspected an imposter. As Team Superman very quickly discovered this Man of Steel was in fact the anti-hero in disguise, with the real Superman held prisoner aboard his ship. After a few minor setbacks, the Super Trio freed Superman, and together the four heroes had relatively less difficulty defeating the anti-hero after Steel used his own computer to strip him of his many superpowers. In the end, he was unmasked as a small, ugly alien. As his computer room revealed, whatever power and menace he possessed had come from a machine just as had the Wizards. It's in Team Superman number 1, July 1999. The Anti-Life Equation. The supposed mathematical proof of the futility of human life and freedom. Loneliness plus alienation plus fear plus despair plus self-worth, divided by mockery, divided by condemnation, divided by misunderstanding, times guilt, times shame, times failure, times judgment. N equals Y, where Y equals hope and N equals folly. Love equals lies, life equal death, self equal dark side. That's in Seven Soldiers, Mr. Miracle miniseries numbers 1 through 4, November 2005 through May 2006. The formula gave whoever learned it the power to dominate the will of any living being. It was Darkseid's primary motive for sending his apocalyptic forces to Earth. He believed that parts of the equation lay in all human beings' subconscious. The formula was called the anti-life equation because if someone possesses absolute control over you, you're not really alive. That's from Forever People number 5, October-November 1971. Darkseid thereafter gained full control of the anti-life equation, and various heroic figures, including Orion and the Shiloh Norman Mr. Miracle, have been documented as having knowledge of it, and even some supercriminals too, such as the Pied Piper. That's in Countdown to Final Crisis number 10, February 20th, 2008. The Anti-Monitor. The Anti-Monitor was every bit the monster the anti-hero wasn't, and a million times more so the murderer of countless beings in countless universes and timelines. Billions of years ago, an alien scientist observed with the origins of the universe violated his culture's taboo against inquiring too deeply into that subject, creating a device that would allow him to see the moment of creation. For reasons lost to antiquity, the experiment disrupted the process of creation itself. The story of what exactly were the unforeseen effects of the machine had changed many times over the years, probably due less to human revisionism than to temporal disruptions that have caused the literal rewriting of history. But many believed that the consequence of the scientist's folly was the creation of evil itself. That evil took the form of the Antimatter, Crisis on Infinite Earths number 1, April 1985, and the creation of the Antimatter universe in which he was simultaneously spawned. Like antimatter itself, the Anti-Monitor was dedicated to the destruction of all matter, his motives, if any, as unimaginable as the scope of his power. In addition to possessing a complement of conventional superpowers, although of considerably greater magnitude than usually found among metahumans, the Anti-Monitor also had reality-warping abilities, as well as technology capable of dislocating, merging, or destroying entire universes. By annihilating countless worlds and timelines and infusing himself with the life force and other energies, the Anti-Monitor grew stronger. Eventually, the destruction of the universe we know as our own was his only remaining objective. But our positive matter universe had spawned a counterpart to the Anti-Monitor, called, naturally, the Monitor, who had amassed an opposing army of superpowered beings, primarily the metahumans of Earth. In the long cosmic conflict that ensued, some timelines merged and others were erased. Many heroes died or were unborn, their altered timelines causing them not to have existed in the first place. But in the end, at the ultimate showdown at the dawn of time, the most evil entity of all time and space was destroyed. In the wake of the multiverse being reborn during the Infinite Crisis, the Anti-Monitor rose again. He has since been working across the galaxy to bring about the universe's destruction by fueling the event known as the Blackest Night, a cosmic upheaval that left no planet unscathed. That's in Green Lantern Sinestro Corps Special Number 1, August 2007. After being killed during the events of Blackest Night, he was subsequently resurrected once more, a formidable force to be reckoned with. That's in Blackest Night Number 8, May 2010. The Anti-Superman. A supercriminal identity briefly assumed by Daily Planet editor Perry White after he was exposed to a personality-altering alien gas during a visit to Superman's Fortress of Solitude on the pre-First Crisis Earth 1. White used various alien technologies found in the fortress to rejuvenate himself and give him superpowers, which he attempted to use for crime until Superman deduced the anti-Superman's identity and exposed White to an antidote. That's in World's Finest Comics number 159, August 1966. So let's take a look over at the Metropolis mailbag. We have one email, actually, and it's from Mr. Dave McElveny. Hi, Dave. He had sent me a package. I haven't gotten it yet as of this recording. It's been delivered, but the FAU mail system is a little bit slow, so it takes a day or two to process. But he writes, "Greetings, Mario. Now we're talking. Nothing against your two previous Bizarro-themed episodes, but I'm very much a Silver Age guy, having been born in the 1950s, so I much prefer the Silver Age version of Bizarro to the Bronze Age and more modern versions. There's so much to enjoy in The Son of Bizarro. We really get to see the pathos of Bizarro in the story, which I think is his most endearing characteristic. He longs to be among others like himself, even more than Superman, who only sometimes seems to want to be among other Kryptonians by visiting the Bottle City of Kandor. I guess Superman, since he looks like the humans of Earth, doesn't feel as different as Bizarro does. This pathos continues with the son of Bizarro, who is hounded and chased away, much as the original Bizarro was in his origin story in Superboy number 68, and continues further with the thwarted maternal ambitions of Bizarro's Supergirl, followed by her tragic death. I know that Bizarros are supposedly non-living and therefore cannot die, but it certainly feels like a death. I think Bizarro and his fellow Bizarros are much stronger characters when the stories emphasize their sad and tragic nature rather than the sillier, us-do-everything-opposite-of-humans versions. In fact, I think this is the downfall of Superman number 306, Backward Battle for the Bizarro World, which you covered recently, in which Bizarro's powers are transformed to the opposite of Superman's. To my mind, Bizarros are imperfect, not opposite, duplicates of Superman. They prefer to behave in ways opposite to humans, but they themselves are simply imperfect, not opposite versions. Others may have different opinions, but that's mine. Hope you had a super birthday. Live long and prosper. Dave McElveny." Thanks for writing in, Dave. Yeah, I kind of get what you're saying. I do like when Bizarro is more of a character that you can sympathize with, and that's he's not a bad guy. He's never once really been a bad guy. He'll do something that's, you know, by our standards, evil or bad or cruel. But he means the best. He thinks that he's helping. He doesn't mean to hurt people. He just gets it confused because he's Bizarro. He's imperfect. I don't know if I'm fully describing it as well as I could be, but that's how I see it. But I do really like Bizarro, and that's why I dedicated this entire month to him. He's one of my favorite villains. Well, quote-unquote villains. He's really a misunderstood guy. That's why I like him. He doesn't mean to do harm. He just kind of finds himself in these situations, you know? So, thank you for stopping by the show. I know you've been a little bit busy with Red Hood and the Outlaws there, buddy, but I really appreciate you coming in and spending some time with me.
Oh, you and Barry, welcome, Mario. Me enjoyed my time here.
And hey, if you ever want to come back on the show, feel free to stop by, you know? Uh-huh. Like I said, I'm going to be doing a Bizarro story sometime in October. I don't know exactly when, but if you want, you can stop by anytime, you know? Just shoot me a text or something. I'll let you know.
Great. Bizarro will keep offer in mind for future.
All right, well, I'll catch you later, buddy.
Bye, buddy. See you soon.
All right, well, let's close out this episode. So we have the matter of the super fact and the super quote. This episode's super fact: in the pre-Crisis on Infinite Earths continuity, the Kryptonian equivalent of a second was called a Thrib. And this episode's super quote comes from Action Comics Volume 2, Number 17. And it's said by Jonathan Kent. "Nobody knows what the future holds, but the important thing is to meet it with courage and your head held high, because Kents aren't quitters." Good night, folks.
Up, up, and away!
For more Up, Up, and Away, visit www.upupandaway.podomatic.com. The show and other Superman-related goodies can be found on Facebook by searching Up, Up, and Away Podcast, and Mario can be contacted through email at mbenesse94@yahoo.com. That's B as in boy, E-N-N-E-S-E. Up, Up, and Away is a proud member of the Superman Podcast Network, and Superman and all related images are property of DC Comics and Warner Brothers Entertainment. All images and music are property of their respective owners, and no infringement is intended. This is a non-profit fan podcast. Superman was created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster.